Here we are. Christmas time is arriving. I hope that you've reasonably chilled. Yeah, we've talked about the panic and the frenzy and the zombie shoppers, haven't we? And Solana was at Sainsbury's yesterday, and she said, you know, the first level you couldn't park on, and on the top level you couldn't park on. There were cars driving around in circles to try and find a space, even on the top level. Quite something else. And traditionally, Christmas Eve is the day where all the dads go shopping. Not very good at shopping normally, but normally it's the men who leave it last minute, and the ladies try to be far more organised. Thank God for that. Otherwise, there'd be no Christmas dinner and those kind of things. But you know, my memories of Christmas are really special. My parents were not particularly well off, but they always liked to be as generous as possible. And I remember one Christmas, I can't quite remember how old I was, I probably was about 11, 10 or 11, and I couldn't wait to wake up because I'd seen how many presents were around the Christmas tree. And I figured that there was only me and my sister, so at least half of them must have been for me. And when I got out of the bed in the morning, they weren't around the tree, but they were piled high right next to my bed. So as you can imagine, any child sees that number of presents, their eyeballs go like Catherine wheels, you know. And I was brought up well, but I wasn't brought up in a Christian home. So we didn't really know a lot about the story of Jesus. So, you know, as fun as it was and exciting as it was, for us it was about presents and about family. But I've called the message this morning, is it about Christmas presents or Christmas presents? Is it about Christmas presents with a T? Or is it about his presence in our life? And I think when I look at that story we've just read from the book of Luke, if it were just a message that they were given, I don't think they would have had that sense of Christmas presence. But when the angels appeared and they revealed the glory of God, the presence of God filled and surrounded that message. And quite often when we hear the Christmas story, we've heard it so many times that if we're not careful, we can just kind of switch off a little bit. And what we all need to regain is that wonder of his presence around this time. When Luke was writing his gospel, Dr. Luke, you remember he was employed to go and make and take findings of Jesus Christ and to interview people and to find out the truth about Jesus. And I think he would have been very meticulous in his research as a doctor. But can you imagine what his face must have looked like as for the first time he's being told about what happened on that day? Now, as thorough as he is, you can't tell me that Luke didn't interview a shepherd. It doesn't say that he did, but I don't believe that he didn't. I believe that Luke, as thorough as he was, got first-hand records of that story. And I can just imagine how they were telling the story. And even if it weren't the shepherds, he would have got it, you know, pretty much first-hand from someone, a relative, I'm sure, he would have spoke to the shepherds. And when they're telling the story, can you imagine what Luke's face must have been like? Do you think he would have been, oh, right, well, okay, sounds a bit fantastic. But... Or do you think, going back to what I said earlier, how the shepherds would have shared it, do you think Luke would have been absolutely amazed at what he was writing? So the challenge for us as Christians is to recapture the magic of Christmas presents. P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E. Presence, the presence of God. Not many years ago, the magic or joy was not found in what one received. In fact, it would be your grandparents and your great-grandparents who told you stories about what they got for Christmas. And it wasn't just their two front teeth. What did they get? What did some of our grandparents get? Who can remember? Brenda, what? They got oranges. Oranges in a stocking. Half a crown. What would that have bought you, half a crown in a shop back then? More oranges. Not many more. Sorry? Depends if rationing was over, yeah. No, it's true, when rationing was on, I mean, I don't know what you got. Any other sort of things? What did... Because obviously, they didn't... A lot of families didn't have a lot years ago. What? A rag doll? Made of rags, probably. Yeah. Lisa, what did you say? Pardon? Fire? Yeah, might have got more coal on the fire. I don't know. A piece of coal, yeah. Chestnuts, roasted chestnuts on an open fire. The simple things. I think the point is that for them, the story of Christmas was not obscured by the amount of gifts around the tree. I've said to the boys, obviously, they'll get some nice Christmas presents this year, but if I thought for a minute that they didn't grasp or understand or even enter into the joy of Christmas, I'd be failing them as a parent. So Christmas presents are fine as long as we raise our children and model for them what Christmas presents is about as well. What they share together, which a lot of people are recognising today's time. The thing that's most valuable is not the gift you give, but it's the time that you give someone. The time that you give. I was chatting to Anna earlier, and Lee's working today, isn't he? And she said, are you looking forward to a break? She said, oh, we're just so tired. Lee come home and he's just fast asleep. And I said, I know, Solana's just finished her school term and last night she was, you know, and she was having a, because she's just so tired. And then she started to talk, Solana started to talk about Christmas dinner, you know, we'd have leftovers from Boxing Christmas Eve and things like that. And I said, look, I really don't mind what we have, even if it's just egg mayonnaise sandwiches. I don't want any pressure to be on our family because we're tired and we need a rest. And this time of year, we're normally pretty tired. It's about his presence in our lives. I was thinking, as the message of the angels brought great joy to the shepherds, so the message of Christ all year round brings joy and salvation to millions of people. I was thinking of Psalm 100, such an amazing, beautiful psalm. It says, shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name, for the Lord is good and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues throughout all generations. You know, for us as Christians, we celebrate Christ all the time because we have that living hope. We have the hope of Christ alive in our hearts. And at Christmas, sadly, there are many folk who don't have the hope of Christ alive in their hearts. There's a very famous author. I won't say who it is because it's sort of recorded. And I get on with her very well. I know her through the book club. And she's on television all the time. She's a very, very popular person. Nice person. And she put this Christmas meme up on Instagram. And it was basically, you know, the only way to survive Christmas is to drink your way through it. And I thought, no, it's a bad message. Although the picture was humorous, there's such a sad reality behind that. And I sent her a message. And I said, if you don't mind me saying, as a friend, you know, I've worked with people who have a lot of alcohol problems. At Christmas, it's a really tough time for them. And I know it wasn't meant that way. And on one level, it's humorous. But on another level, it's desperately sad. And you know what she said to me? She said, Simon, I'm so sorry. I put it up and I never give it a thought. She said, thank you for raising that. And I sent her a verse from Proverbs, and it said, wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. And in the environment that she's in, she sells millions of books. She'll have people, you know, falling over themselves. And she said, oh, let me send you a signed book, this, that, and the other, you know, as a thank you. And I thought, I didn't even reply to that, because I don't want a signed book. I just wanted to say, let's look out for each other at Christmas. Let's look out for one another, because some people really struggle. For those who don't want to celebrate Christmas, maybe they can go back to work if they want. I don't think they'd choose that, would they? But it is about Christ. And sadly, many today, and particularly the teens and the 20s and the 30s, they'll be absolutely partying their head off. They'll be absolutely drunk as a skunk. They'll be off their head on drugs. They'll be getting in at all crazy hours of the morning. And that's how the world celebrates. But they're not celebrating Christ, are they? It's just an excuse. Are you going to the Christmas Eve nightclub? You know, I remember because I've been there. I remember how they used to charge you 4 times the price for going to the same thing. The drinks were twice the price. It was an expensive time. But how sad that even when the world wants to party, it's not partying because of the good news of Christ. One of the most famous kings in the Bible became the world's biggest pleasure seeker. Can anyone tell me who that was?
Solomon,
yes. Solomon, well, he was Jekyll and Hyde, really, wasn't he, in his life? The Lord spoke to Solomon in a dream and said, "What would you have me do for you?" And Solomon said, "Give me wisdom to govern this great people of yours." And Solomon so pleased the Lord that his requests were not for riches and honor and everything else, that the Lord blessed him with riches and honor. And he said that because there was a time in Solomon's life when his heart was right. But then it all went to his head, like a strong glass of sherry. And he had more wives and more mother-in-laws than he could handle, more concubines and porcupines. And he chased after, he just partied hard. And listen to his own words in the book of Ecclesiastes. I love the book of Ecclesiastes. If you don't really know what it's about, it'd really confuse you. But listen to his own words. "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. "Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless." You can imagine he's almost drunk as he's saying it. "I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved meaningless. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun." Thank God for his wisdom. Because even in his folly, what he's basically saying is, you can have the lot and you'll still be empty. And it will still be gone. And when you're in the grave, your body will decay just like everyone else's. I don't know about you, but I love TV characters with character. And it tends to be some of the old school ones. It's not very PC to say it now, but when I was growing up, Alf Garnett was quite a character. He looked like half of my characters in my family, being from Dan Saff. But, you know, that's exactly what he was like. And he was so cantankerous that there was a certain charm about him. And then there was Victor Meldrew. "I don't believe it," he said. And there was something, I don't know, maybe I'm just a bit odd, but there was something almost adorable about just the way he was, you know. And you learnt to love him with all his faults and warts and all. But they were so cynical about life. And actually, there was a real sadness behind the characters, really. I mean, Victor's wife was real, very long-suffering, wasn't she? What was her name? Do you remember Victor Meldrew's wife? Elizabeth, was it? Not sure. But, you know, you get these characters, and even on the television, they're portraying life with all of its cynicism. And we can laugh about it, but actually, it's very sad. If I remember rightly, the last episode of One Foot in the Grave was a sad one, wasn't it?
Yeah,
he got hit. Yeah, he died. He got hit by a car. They didn't quite know how to end his life. They couldn't end it on a high note because that wasn't what he was like. We live in a world where people are very, very cynical. And that cynicism robs people of joy. You don't look at children, they love Christmas. They love the time of being with family and the extra chocolate and the food and everything else. But, you know, let's not rob people of the joy of the Christmas story. I found a few comments from children who wrote to Santa. And one of them said, "Dear Santa, I want a puppy, I want a playhouse, thank you. I've been good most of the time, sometimes I'm wild." That's what a child wrote. Another child, a four-year-old, wrote this, "I'll take anything because I haven't been good." Another one, "Dear Santa, I'm not going to ask for a lot. Here's my list. Remote control truck, colour TV, DVD player, Xbox, stereo system, and of course a pack of pencils. Maybe you could drop the pencils. I don't want to be too greedy." It is a lovely time. Christmas is a fabulous time. It's a time for rest, of enjoying food, Boxing Day football. It's a lovely time. But, you know, in the midst of it all, that time has been given us as a gift because of Christ's loving kindness to us all. I want to finish the message this morning on the theme about God's glory. You know, it says the glory of the Lord surrounded the shepherds. When you read about glory in the Bible, it's quite an amazing thing. And quite often, in fact, probably every situation where God's glory is manifest, people drop down as if they're dead. Because the glory of the Lord is probably far too magnificent for us to even perceive with our eyes. And the presence of the Lord must be so holy that our natural reaction would be to fall down in the presence of the majesty of God. Who can remember a biblical prophet who had a vision of the Lord high and lifted up and his train filled? Isaiah the prophet was a very godly man. He was a prophet to Israel. And Isaiah was caught up in a vision of the Lord. And his reaction was basically to be overwhelmed with what he was seeing. As we get older, we can become a little bit more disappointed with things and we see the state of the world and we can get a bit tired and cynical. But I say to you, don't lose your wonder of the miracle of the angels telling the story of the birth of Christ, because it's amazing. When God became man, man believed in his glory. In John 1 verse 14, it says, "We beheld his glory." 2 Peter 1:16 says, "We were eyewitnesses of his glory," speaking of Jesus. We saw the glory of God in Jesus' miracles. Jesus and the Father glorified each other when Jesus died and rose for us. We sing glory to God in the highest because there's no one else who's worthy of glory. There's no politician or king or prime minister, certainly not. As hard as they work, we're in an absolute mess, aren't we? That's why the Bible says we should pray for our leaders. We should pray for them. It's very easy to criticise them. I wouldn't want Theresa May's job. Whatever your opinions are of that lady, I can't imagine the hours that she has to put in for a start. It just must be horrendous. Can you imagine getting up every morning knowing that somebody is going to be writing horrible things about you? Somebody's going to be mocking you to your face. You're going to be, well, I just couldn't imagine being in a job like that. Very difficult. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11 to 14. Don't forget, this is the same Solomon who'd partied hard. This is what he wrote, speaking of God. "He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all this toil. This is the gift of God. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it so that men will revere him." We receive blessing after blessing every day. The oxygen in our lungs. The wonderful things that our eyes see. I think Marion said this morning about your eyes. You've had your, Dorothy, sorry, you had your cataracts done, and all of a sudden she sees colour and everything seems alive again. And it reminded me of a video of a man who received, people are colourblind. You know, there are people that are colourblind, aren't they? And they've never seen colour, just black and white. And you know that, I don't know if you've seen it, that you can actually buy glasses, special glasses that are made, that when they wear them, they can see colour for the first time. If you go on YouTube or Facebook or look on the internet, you'll see videos of people whose family have bought them this gift of seeing the colour. And you know what I'm like, I'm a bit emotional, I cry at girly films and all these things. And I'm watching this and I'm getting choked up because you see people seeing colour for the first time. You know, people in their, you know, retirement age, it's the first time they've ever seen colour. And they open the bottle, oh, what's this? You know, a pair of glasses, put these on. And they start crying and they go, is this what it looks like? Is that red? Is that black? And to see it, it's absolutely amazing. And I'm going to finish with this. They are recapturing a sense of wonder for the things that we've taken for granted. And that's what we have to do with our Christian faith and our love for God, is recapture, rekindle. You know, in a marriage, you have to fan into flame and rekindle the love and compassion that you have for one another. Because if you don't, things can get a little bit like Tin Man, you need a good oil, a bit squeaky, a bit hard. The last finally. I've had a couple of finalies today. You've not been counting, have you? Exactly. The Christian says, if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. If I find in myself a desire and longing which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. In John 14, Jesus said to his disciples, do not let your heart be troubled. Trust in God and trust also in me. In my Father's house there are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, but I'm going ahead of you. This is what Jesus is telling them before he's going to the cross. These are some of his last words before the crucifixion. And he says to them, don't be discouraged. Don't lose hope, because where I'm going and what I'm preparing for you is out of this world. It seems incredible now, but I'm telling you the truth. The best is yet to come. And it is out of this world. And one day there'll be a new heavens and a new earth, and it'll be in this world. Amazing. No more tears or sadness or suffering. No more diabetes or gangrene or cancer or anything. Just how God things intended from the beginning. That's going to be incredible. Make sure you're there.